It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Jennifer Say is a former champion gymnast. She also spent 2 decades working for Levi's. An author, an advocate, a mom, and a wife, Jen is someone who is not afraid to speak her mind when it comes to things she has experienced in her life, including being someone who spoke up before anyone when it comes to the abuse in the world of elite gymnastics. She wrote a book about it and produced a television series on Netflix that uncovered the horrific stories that we all now know about Larry Nassar and the U.S. gymnastics team. I met Jen through my advocacy in 2020 when I was questioning the leadership here in New York after finding out about our former governor ordering nursing homes to take in thousands of COVID-positive patients, and she was talking about how school closures would be harmful to our children. When I wrote my book, I Am the Storm, inspiring stories of people who fight against overwhelming odds, I knew that Jen would be a powerful chapter to include because she's been up against many Goliaths in her life. And despite being scorned and punished for her opinions and views, she has always risen above it with class and dignity. And now my friend Jen Say has launched her own company, whose message is to support our female athletes. Something that Jen has been doing for decades, but now she's wearing the t-shirt to prove it. Please welcome my friend Jen Say to the Janice Dean podcast. Jennifer Say, you made the Dean's list.
Ah, I was like, what's that? Cool. I'm so psyched to be here and see you again.
I know. I love seeing you in person.
It's fun.
Well, I feel like we have kept in touch over the years.
We have.
Yeah.
Yes. And you were so kind and lovely and supportive, not once but twice, with my kind of my cancellations. I'm a two-timer, and it was just good to know you had a friend out there saying you can do it. So thank you.
You are welcome, because I felt the same about you. You know, when you're out there trying to raise awareness on something that might be quote unquote controversial, even though when you look back, none of what we were saying was controversial. You know, you stand out like a sore thumb. And I felt like, you know, myself advocating for the elderly, where our governor was putting COVID positive patients into their elder care facilities against all science. And then you speaking up on behalf of, you know, our kids that who should have been in schools, right? And your whole life changed.
Yeah. Yeah, my life is pretty unrecognizable. It was hard for a long time. It's good now. It's getting good.
You feel good.
Yeah, but I will say, and I'm sure you've noticed this, all of the kind of mainstream publications now, from the New York Times to CNN, are saying, oh my goodness, the devastating harms from the prolonged school closures. It's startling. And I'm like, startling?
How do you feel? Because when I see that, I get angry. Yeah.
Yeah. People write me and they're like, don't you feel, you know, a sense of having been redeemed? I'm like,
no,
I feel really angry.
Yeah.
I actually would almost prefer it if I was totally wrong, because I lost my entire life and there's still no apology. There's from anyone, friends that I lost, which is the most painful.
Of course.
They're not like, oh, we're really sorry, Jen. You were actually right.
Ugh.
And by the way, you carried yourself with poise and you were diplomatic. You never seemed angry. You just seemed fact-based. No, it's still like, well, you may have been right, but it's for the wrong reasons. And you're still a terrible person. It doesn't matter. And so, and then of course, worse than any of that, the kids, the harms are lasting.
Yes.
And the harms are most lasting for the children who were are the most vulnerable, the poorest children, everything I was saying.
Yeah.
And so I don't feel any sense of redemption. I feel really angry.
Mm. Take us back to people that didn't know what was going on. You spoke up very early about the school closures. What made you do that?
Yeah, it's interesting. In some ways, I don't know.
Well, I do because you're an advocate for kids.
I know, but I didn't think of myself that way.
Really? I mean, we got to go back to your gymnastics career. Okay, go back a little further.
I mean, the long and short of it is, I'll try to make it brief, but I was an elite gymnast as a child. I was on the national team for 7 years and the 1986 national champion. And as everyone now knows, gymnastics is an environment that is rife with abuse.
Yes.
It's a terrible training environment. And the 80s was really bad. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the sexual abuse that's been exposed because of Dr. Larry Nassar, doctor, I put in air quotes, but there's extreme emotional and physical abuse mm-hmm. as well. You know, examples, I trained on a broken ankle for 2 years. I was, you know, on a forced starvation diet. I was weighed in and my weight was announced on a loudspeaker. If I gained a quarter pound and then forced to do an hour of extra brutal conditioning. I mean, I could go on. It's terrible. And so called garbage, called all kinds of horrible names, not one time, like daily, persistently. So when I came out of the sport, I was completely beaten down and just broken physically and emotionally. And it took me, I don't know, 15, 20 years to get past that. Because when you tell a child she's garbage, she believes you.
Yeah.
So to make sense of it, I sat down and tried to write it all down when I was almost 40. And I ended up writing a book called Chalked Up, which was my first book. And it was the first account that was a first person account of the just horrific treatment. And this is 2008. No one wanted to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
This is pre-Me Too. You weren't supposed to talk. You were supposed to just treat these horrible coaches and laud them because they, you know, had teams in the Olympics. And so I was dragged across the internet by my community of gymnasts and, you know, Olympians and that. And that was really difficult. But mm-hmm. I learned I could handle it. And I also learned that the more they come at you, it strengthened my resolve because mm-hmm. I felt like they don't get it or they're hiding something, which I now know was absolutely the case, you know, because the Nassar thing was being covered up.
Of course.
By officials at USAG, by the president who called and bullied me to stop talking about what I was talking about.
Wow.
So that's long and short of it. And I think that really, I didn't want another child to go through what I went through.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know it at the time, but I was becoming an advocate for children. So then when COVID happened and my own kids go to public school, despite the fact that none of my peers have children in public school, I just saw it from the beginning. And it was me and my husband. It wasn't just me. We saw it from before they closed. We were like, this cannot happen. This is going to be horrible for children. It's, as my friend Jay Bhattacharya says, it's trickle-down epidemiology. It's like the most vulnerable in society will suffer the most from these closures. The poor, the low income, the hourly wage worker who has to leave two children at home. And it was just so obvious to me, the learning loss, the mental health impacts, everything we now know. Mm-hmm. And so I just raged against it from literally day one, which in San Francisco, you can imagine that was not a popular opinion.
Right.
And you know what? People in San Francisco, I hate to say it, they don't care about kids. It has the lowest percentage of children of any city in America. It's even lower now after COVID because families left, and the lowest percentage of children in public schools. So there's a lot of rich families with one child sending them to fancy private schools mm-hmm. for $60,000 a year, and they got to go to school.
Of course they did.
And those same woke people were yelling at me, you can't say these things. And I would go to school board meetings virtually and say them. We led rallies, and I was just vilified in my own community by my own friends. So it was a really hard couple of years. I definitely suffered for it mentally and physically, but I pulled myself together and stood strong, and I had my husband and we stood together, and he's just the best.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. And I ended up resigning from Levi's and moved on to do my own thing. I didn't want to have to watch my words. I left San Francisco. I didn't want to be in that community anymore, a place I'd lived 30 years. I couldn't stand to be around those people who were willing to just forsake children. I go back on occasion. I can't stand it. I feel like they're the biggest hypocrites, that whole city.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. I got Gavin Newsom.
I know.
It's hard to describe how much I can't stand them. And then Gavin, because I have a lot of special disdain for him, now has the nerve to say, I didn't shut the schools down.
He's saying that?
Yes.
That he didn't shut the schools down?
Well, so is Randy Weingarten, and
oh,
so is Dr.
I
had nothing to do with it.
Right.
because they're all going like this.
Right, they're saying, pointing fingers.
Yeah, I didn't have the authority. Public health is saying, well, we just made recommendations. The government's saying, I just followed
so
public health recommendations. Randy's saying, it's the same. And Randy's saying, we did. Well, you said all the teachers would die and you marched around with coffins, Randy, saying we'll all die if we have to go back to school. So the whole thing is awful. But I spent the last 2 years working on my own projects.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of them?
Yeah. Well, I wrote a book.
Yes.
Which I think I was on and talked with you about. And then I'm making a movie.
I saw the trailer. It looks amazing.
Thanks.
So tell me about that.
So the movie is called Generation COVID, and it's a documentary about the harms to children from prolonged school closures. We're finished filming, and we're in post-production, so we're editing. It's going to be amazing.
Wow. How'd you do that?
Well, you know, I was involved, having been so outspoken from the beginning, as I'm sure you understand, there weren't very many of us, and we found each other fast on social media. You know, when there's not a lot of people, you kind of find each other. And so, and they, we were from across the country. So, and we wanted kids and families from across the country to represent the whole, you know, of the United States. And so I had a network of people, and I would just call and I'd say, hey, Liz, in your community in Oregon, do you know any families like this? And we wanted the full range of issues as well. So everything from learning loss to weight gain to mental health. We have one family, very sadly, who lost a child to suicide. So I just started networking and researching, but I must have talked on the phone to over 200 families to select the 10.
And we'll be back with more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
I think everyone that has kids was affected. I mean, for me, you know, my oldest was okay with the iPad and the distant learning, but my youngest could not handle it. And that's why we put them in Catholic schools.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we're Catholic, but I was a big public school believer, went to public school. Both my kids were in public school. But when I found out that the Catholic schools were still open, one day they closed.
Yeah.
I was like, is there any way I can get my children into Catholic school?
Yeah.
And thank goodness I was able to, especially for Theodore, because he could not learn. He could not log in and just hear all of the kids talking over each other and the teacher not knowing how to do everything. It was like PTSD, like seriously.
Well, and imagine doing that for a year and a half.
No, I mean, you can't learn.
You cannot learn.
No. Nope.
It's even if you are, you know, of a family with means, the isolation. I mean, the child in our film, or the family that lost a child to suicide, they're probably the most kind of well-off family in the film. I mean, they're not rich by any means, but, you know, upper middle class family in Connecticut. And nothing could protect a child from the isolation and the hopelessness.
Yeah.
Because this poor child, you know, was in high school just when you're supposed to be individuating from your family and like sneaking out and, you know, getting out and kind of figuring
becoming
out who you are without your parents, was locked in his room. And not only that, he was made to feel that he was a terrible, selfish person if he didn't want that. Because there's a global pandemic. What's wrong with you, you selfish child? You know, and no prom, no games, no sports, and no hope as to when it might end. And when you're a child, an adolescent, you live in the moment. And so no one's giving you hope that this will end. You'll be able to go back to school in the fall. It's like, oh, well, ever, when the pandemic ends. And so this child lost hope. It's the most devastating story in the film. I mean, the family is so lovely. But you know, we did try to, we have one family from here in New York, in Queens, and just the loveliest, sweetest family, but, you know, not a ton of money. We're hoping for a sports scholarship for their son, a football scholarship, but he didn't get to play for two seasons, and then he gained 100 pounds, and then he didn't get the scholarship, and so now he doesn't know what's going to happen. It's just the impacts are lifelong. They really are. And, you know, there's been all sorts of studies saying, you know, the impact financially for all of these kids who didn't graduate high school, didn't, because we know your life expectancy declines if you don't graduate high school. This is not, I mean, for these kids who had a tough road anyway. Mm-hmm. We made it impossible.
Yeah. And none of these states want to do any after action reviews. Yeah.
Well, no, because it's all on them and everybody would lose their jobs.
I will say New Jersey did one.
Oh, that's good.
900 pages. And, you know, I was interested, obviously, in the nursing home stuff because Murphy did very much the same thing as Cuomo did, and that is put COVID positive patients into nursing homes. And it was brutal. It
was.
Went there. It
interesting.
Did. Yeah. So I have not read about the school closures, but I'm assuming that that's probably going to be brutal too. But every single state needs to do that.
Yeah.
Not a big fan of Governor Murphy, but man, hats off to him for doing that. Totally.
Yeah, stand up.
So, you know, like
Gavin won't.
Of course he won't.
Yeah.
And that's what drives me crazy. It's like for everything else, for Hurricane Katrina, for 9/11,
right.
There were commissions, there were hearings, there were investigations, and none of that for the COVID pandemic.
No, it's really astonishing. And you know what also won't happen if you don't review it? One, it could happen again, which
of
is my biggest fear.
Of course it's going to happen again.
And two, there's no help given to these children.
Right.
Like, why isn't it? First of all, none of the COVID school money was spent, a very small percentage. So supposedly there's all this money that was supposed to go to ventilation in schools, which they didn't need. They just needed to open the doors and maybe a window. That was all they needed to do.
Yep.
That's what they did in Europe. There's all that money, apparently. Well, why not have full-time school? No summer break. Why not have tutors for every child that fell behind in reading? Because if a child doesn't read by third grade, the chances they will graduate high school are severely diminished. Mm-hmm. If they don't graduate high school, the chances they live in poverty and actually end up in prison are severely increased.
Wow.
So this should be an all hands on deck effort.
Totally.
And there are organizations. There's this organization called Zero Dropouts in Colorado, which I discovered and led us to a great set of families in Colorado. They literally go door to door. So they get the names of the kids that haven't been in school from the school district. They go door to door getting the families to send their child back to school. Mm. And then they counsel them and help them catch up in their credits.
Wow.
Like, why aren't the districts doing this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do we have to rely on this amazing nonprofit?
Mm-hmm.
And these people are, they're doing God's work.
Right.
I mean, honestly, they get the door slammed in their face 15 times before someone will answer it and start to talk to them. And then they coax the family to get this child
That's
to come
amazing.
Back to
Those
school.
Are angels here on earth.
They really are. And a lot of these kids, they went to work during COVID. Think about it. This is an immigrant community in Greeley, Colorado. They went to work at the warehouses and distribution centers. They started making minimum wage full time. They were helping their families. For an 18-year-old kid, that's a lot of money. And they were like, why would I go back to school now?
Yeah. I remember, too, you telling me that there have been pandemic protocols. And part of the New Jersey, look back, the 900-page document, said exactly that there was a pandemic playbook that basically knew the scenario was going to happen, suggested things like we've talked about, kids should be in school, don't put sick patients in with the elderly, and they didn't know it was there.
Well, in some cases, because there was a CDC pandemic
I remember you saying that.
In 2006, thrown out the window. And the whole reason you do a playbook is so that you don't panic in real time.
Exactly.
I mean, you do them in business too, so I'll get to my next thing I've been doing in a second. But that's why when something bad happens, we panic. The reason you have a playbook is so that you can act calmly and follow the steps you laid out when
Correct.
You were thinking clearly.
Yes.
And that is not what happened. And it is incredibly frustrating. And I just feel really sad and angry if I sit and think about it too long. So I try not to.
Yeah, but you are turning your advocacy into something great in many respects. I mean, you're working on this movie. You've also been, you know, very vocal about keeping females in sports. You know, tell me about that. How did that all happen?
Yeah. So the other thing I've been working on, which just launched for all the world, is my own brand, launching my own clothing brand. And never in my life did I want to be a founder, Janice. I liked working in a company. I mean, I'm sort of conventional that way. Like, I didn't want to scrap and figure out how to get benefits for employees and like all this stuff. I liked building brands. I love product. I love marketing. I didn't want to do that back of house stuff. Like, I just didn't want to build something from scratch. But as I was interviewing in the past 2 years, I just realized I couldn't go work for someone else again that was going to tell me how to behave, what I could say, that was going to micromanage my words, that was going to criticize me at every turn. You talk too fast. You do this too much. You don't do this enough.
And ironically, Levi's hired you because of your advocacy for women in sports.
Well, I started there as a basically a kid before I even wrote my book and did any of that. But they were very supportive of that. They, you know, full credit where credit is due. But, you know, you just in the corporate world, you're sort of forced to put in you are in a box. There's modes of behavior. And it's gotten worse, I will say, over the last 10 years. HR departments have increased in their power and influence. It used to be HR just, you know, figured out benefits and did some recruiting. And now they're like making you go to DEI training every 5 minutes. They're telling you, you know, you get lists of words that you can say and you can't say, and it changes every day. And employees, frankly, are terrified they're going to say the wrong word and get canceled. And so I was like, I'm 55. I can't do this their way. I know what I'm doing. So there's that part. But I also just didn't want to be told how to do it. Yes. I didn't want to be told you don't know how to market to women.
Okay,
really? I actually am a woman and you're not. So, you know, an opportunity just happened. I met someone who wanted to start a brand. He had money, just a local guy in Denver. He had an idea, but it wasn't great. And I was like, well, why don't I kind of see what I can come up with? So what I came up with is this brand that we launched yesterday called XXXY Athletics. And it's the only athletic clothing brand to stand up for the protection of women's sports and female athletes. It's sort of the only thing I could have ever done with my life. When you think about it, it's like I was an elite athlete. I know how to build brands. And I have a penchant, apparently, for speaking inconvenient truths. So I'm super excited about it. We launched yesterday. Our first day's sales exceeded our predicted first week sales by 50%. I think there is a silent majority that is hungry for this. They're afraid to speak up because they're afraid of being called a transphobe or a bigot. But it's common sense. You know, men are faster and stronger than women. That you don't need to be a doctor to know that. You don't need to be a biologist. You just need to acknowledge reality. And most people know it and agree with us, but they're too afraid because you do get dragged for it. But if we can normalize it and say, come on out, we'll stand with you, you won't be alone, then I think we can start a movement.
Wow. So what, I mean, you've got the t-shirts, which are very cool. What other things are you bringing to the world of
So the first drop, girls, as we call it, the drop, is cotton product. So it's more like casual basics, joggers, sweatshirts, t-shirts, t-shirts with messaging like Girl Dad or Born Brave, woman with a TM, which is my favorite because apparently we need to trademark womanhood at this point.
Oh my God.
And the t-shirts are selling like crazy.
They're very nice, by the way. Jen gave me one. It is very good quality and it's comfy and it's soft. I mean, actually, to be honest with you, I love t-shirts. This one's thick. I mean, this is a big deal. It's not just a flimsy t-shirt.
No, I want to make the best product.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is there's a lot of people starting what are called parallel economy brands. Have you heard of the parallel economy?
What's that?
Or freedom economy. It's basically people who are pushing back on kind of woke capitalism and the very woke messaging from most brands, frankly.
Okay.
But they don't know how to make product. They just have an idea and they're excited about it. And God bless them. They go out and they figure it out. But the fact is, if you want to start a company and you don't make outstanding product that can compete with the very best brands in the world, people are going to buy it once and they're never going to come back. And it's a lot of people who don't know how to make beer, but they're like, in response to Bud Light, you know, trying to make a beer, or they don't know how to make some app, but they're going to make an app. I know how to do this. And so that was my goal, is to make the very best product that can compete with the very best brands. And again, it's not anti-woke. It's just pro-truth.
Right.
This is not right or left. I mean, you know me. I was a lifelong lefty. I still don't consider myself a righty. I just feel homeless. And so this issue, standing up for girls and women, that is not political.
No. That and is, listen, you can be whatever you want to be.
You can
do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
You let your freak fly.
Totally.
But just don't do it in a girl's change room.
Right. Right. We're not anti-trans. We just have compassion for women and girls who are being told sit down and be quiet because these biological males need to be included. And I'm sorry, I spent my life sitting down and being quiet because men were telling me what to do. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
And we can have an open category. This is not exclusion. There's fair ways to do it so everybody can compete on a fair and even playing field. Mm-hmm. I think we should have an open category. What's wrong with that?
Interesting. Why not?
Yeah. Why not? We have a separate category. We have Paralympic category.
Sure. Has that been brought up?
It has been, and we don't allow fully able-bodied people to identify as disabled. Is that the right word?
No, listen, I've had people come on the program that are quote-unquote disabled, and I've asked them, is that a okay term to use? And they say it is okay.
Okay, so we don't have fully able-bodied people competing in the Paralympic category.
That's a very good point. And why are we?
Because it's not fair. It wouldn't be fair.
That is exactly it. What kind of response are you getting?
Oh, wait. I want to say this first drop is like mostly cotton and casual. The next drop, which is coming soon, we were in a hurry to get product out. We wanted to get it out in the world.
Yep.
But we do have a lot more stuff coming soon. And we're going to have all the performance product, things like leggings and bike shorts and, you know, performance fabrics that you can work out in. So that's coming really soon. So stay with us and keep checking back because there's a lot more.
Amazing. Okay. Yeah. So where can they go?
So the best place to go is thetruthfits.com.
Ooh, thetruthfits.com.
Yeah, the real URL is xx-xyathletics.com, but the Truth Fits is easier to remember and it will direct you there.
So Truth Fits, I love it. Okay, so the response, what have people been saying?
It's been pretty amazing. Like we had an outstanding first day of sales, as I said, and just mostly love in our mentions and mine. You know, there's a few what you might expect haters, you know, one from somebody I know saying you can be pro girls and women's and not, I can't remember what the word was, but basically, you know, obliterate an entire category of people from the planet, it's such a nonsensical point of view.
Everybody can make t-shirts to reflect whatever the heck they want.
Well, and also, we're not saying we don't want we don't like you.
Yeah.
We're saying let's have compassion for women and girls and let them have Title IX. The protections built in from Title IX in 1972 are at risk here. And so I'm sorry, they're not as fast and as strong. Mm-hmm. You know, one statistic I say, Allison Felix, a track and field world record holder for many, many years, gold medalist, world everything. In 2017, she was the fastest woman in the world in her categories. 1,500 males beat her times down to the high school level. Like, she wouldn't have even made the national team, let alone won an Olympics and a world championship. Mm-hmm. She would have lost to 15-year-old high school sophomore boys.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so blatantly clear. And this woman is a warrior. She's a champion.
Yeah.
It's just not fair. So the response has been amazing. Lots of love, mostly. Lots of people saying what I hoped, which is, oh, thank goodness somebody's finally doing this. Mm. Somebody's finally doing this.
Good for you. Well, I really do believe that whole adage of a door closes, a window opens. And that, you know, that's kind of the way life works. Sometimes it takes a few years, maybe a few decades for it to come full circle and you realize, well, that had to happen for me to get here.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. And you have to be ready for an open door. Like you can't shut yourself off to the possibilities. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there was part of me, frankly, I'm 55. I'm like, what am I doing starting a new thing? Like I should just go get some dumb job somewhere. Say the things they're telling me to say.
But that's not you.
No, and then in 5 years, I can hopefully maybe retire. But I couldn't do it. You know, the last round of interviews I did, I was interviewing for an $8 billion retailer, the CEO of a company.
Okay.
Everything went well. I had, you know, you have like 27 interviews I'd interviewed. And no one brought up any of my sort of controversies. They just asked me about my experience, my expertise. How would you manage this brand? The last person was HR.
Mm-hmm.
Do you regret your actions?
Oh, no. So you went through all of those interviews and then you get to HR and they ask you that question.
And I said no.
Yeah.
And guess what happened? You can guess. So it was at that point that I said, okay, I need a plan B. I need to do something else. I didn't know what, but I knew even if she had, let's say I said, oh, I do regret, and they hired me, like I was going to be in a box. I was going to be managed and told what I could say and couldn't say.
You should thank that woman.
Yeah. Maybe. It was as soon as the question came, I was like, well, this is over.
Oh, you know? Man.
But I knew I was going to say what was true, which is, no, I don't regret it.
Yeah.
Because I was 100% right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It might have been in vain. The schools didn't open. But you know what? For every person that stands up, and I'm sure you've experienced this, and says something true, you bring another person out and along. And
yes.
You can build a cohort that is meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have to go out first and do that, I mean, if I hadn't done what I'd done in gymnastics, 10 years later, we wouldn't have had this army of survivors, as they're called, and you know some of them, mm-hmm. come forward and ensure that Larry Nassar was put in prison for life.
Yeah. Sometimes it just takes one person. I really believe
it
that.
It really is like there's a cascade. There's like a domino effect. And I tell people, steel yourself. It'll be hard, but it will be worth it. And, you know, I'll stand with you. So, this was the inevitable outcome. I didn't know it at the time, but I'm happy I'm here and I'm having so much fun. I mean, the other thing that's fun about it is when you get to be an executive, you spend a lot of time in boardrooms talking about, you know, how many people you're going to lay off in the next round. Like, you get very disconnected from what it is you love to do.
Mm-hmm.
I love to make the product that people are going to wear, and I love to make marketing content that engages hearts and minds. I don't love sitting in a boardroom talking about layoffs.
Yeah.
Who would?
No. I know, and that's what's happening these days.
It's all you do.
Yeah.
And so to get to, like, write the copy, I'm, like, in it, you know? It's really, so I'm having a blast, and whatever, I'm 55, so there you have it.
You said that. I feel the same way, though. I mean, listen, when I turned 40, I thought everything was over. I remember I was like, well, my TV career is over at 40, so I got to start thinking about other things I'm going to do. But I'm pushing 54.
In this business, I'm sure it feels that way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I really think that women have to stick up for themselves and stick up for each other. It's the same kind of thing in this business.
It's interesting. In corporate, women often have a later surge than men because they have a little pause for having children where they don't necessarily step out, but they're not kind of trying to get to the next level.
Yes.
So often for women, the surge is in their late 40s in corporate. So I'm pushing it to mid-50s. But there's also a ton of evidence that for founder-led brands, there's a much higher chance of success when the founder is more experienced and in their 50s.
Okay.
Founders in their 50s have much higher chance of success. So I feel like everything's in my favor.
Don't go anywhere. We'll have more of the Janice Dean podcast right after this. Okay, so you've got another book. What about politics? Would you go into that?
No. Doesn't that sound terrible?
Well,
to go into politics?
I understand it. It's not fun. It's crazy, actually.
Well, yeah, and I mean, think about it. If I want to say what I think, you have all these handlers telling you, say it this way, do it this way. I mean, you can almost see it with some of them that are campaigning sometimes. You're like, okay, that's not what he
wanted
to say.
Very sad. I watched the Arnold Schwarzenegger documentary on Netflix, and I loved it for many reasons. It just sort of documented his life from somebody that wanted to be, bodybuilder, first of all, come to America. That was his biggest dream. Then he made it as an actor. And then he said, you know, being a governor was probably the greatest thing he ever did.
Certainly.
And the reason why is because he kind of went in there as an outsider, not knowing the whole machine. And he got to meet with people. He would actually, you know, he smokes his cigars.
Yeah.
He would bring, like, Democrats and Republicans to a cigar room and they'd talk over policy. And I was like, my gosh, we need more of that.
Yeah.
We need more Jennifers. We need more maybe Janices. What people that have gone and fought for something that's important and aren't going to, like, kowtow to, like, these people.
Yeah, it's true. After I resigned from Levi's, there were quite a few people that approached me, even some, you know, a PAC in Colorado with, you know, would you run? And I was like, I cannot think of anything that sounds more unpleasant and awful than that.
I think if I was ever to do it, I have to be an independent because I just believe both sides, unfortunately, are just
corrupt.
Corrupt and also just sort of in their own little tiny boxes. They can't think of anything outside of their own little neighborhood.
It's so true. And I just, you know, I get called, as you might imagine, you know, alt-right, every, you know, crazy fascist alt-right, QAnon, which I had to look up. I didn't even know what QAnon was the first time I was called that. I don't want to be a member of either team. I really can't. Like, because, you know, it's so polarized. If you don't sign up for every pillar of the platform,
right,
you're excommunicated. Well, I don't want to be part of a team that behaves that way.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I also believe in shining a spotlight on the people that did do things right, like the Catholic schools or the governors that decided they weren't going to put sick patients in with elderly people.
Yeah.
You know, like, why can't we highlight those great people?
Yeah, the Catholic schools. I know there was a distinct study done for the kids in Catholic schools and there was zero learning loss.
Yeah, because they
didn't. Which is amazing.
Yeah. So, listen, I mean,
so we're not running for office.
No, we're not. No. But then I do say to myself, well, then who? Who's going to rise to that occasion that wants to do something, that wants to change things?
I don't know, but I think we each have a responsibility to put our unique talents to use to, you know, make a difference in the world. And fortunately or unfortunately, I have a talent for brand development and running a business. That's what I'm good at. And I really like it. And I like brands, in my mind, are a tool of culture in the same way art and music and everything are. And unfortunately, the very extreme woke left has infiltrated capitalism, which is weird because they also consider themselves socialists. So it's like, doesn't even make any sense. And they've put this messaging out. They've sort of smuggled these ideological, very, I don't even want to call them left. I don't even know what they are. They've smuggled these ideas into their marketing and communication. And so they've gained endorsement from them before they even get in front of legislatures, if you see what I'm saying. Yeah. So why can't I put a different message into the market?
Yeah.
Equally high quality. And unfortunately, a lot of the sort of more right-wing brands, and again, I don't consider myself right, they just put garbage into the market. Like, there are certain brands that put content into the marketplace, ads, Nike, Levi's, that are culture making. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one, my favorite of all time, is a Nike ad from 1995 called If You Let Me Play. Do you remember this one?
Yes.
I mean, it made me cry. It's a beautiful piece of film.
Yeah.
So I want to make stuff like that.
I love it. Well, I know you're going to do it. And when does the movie come out?
Well, we're editing. We should have a rough cut like in a week or two, and then we'll get to final edit in a month or two. I need to sell it. So if anyone is listening that is interested, because I want big distribution. This is not a right-wing movie. I don't want it coded as such. This is a movie about children.
Well, why can't a Netflix or a Hulu?
It's a good question.
Why not?
Well, they have.
They put stuff out there that's quote unquote controversial.
Yeah, they're not responding to my emails. And I have had a film bought and distributed on Netflix called Athlete A. So, I would love that. That's my goal, is broad reach distribution, because we've made the film with the people in mind, viewers who were perhaps very pro-closure, because I want to try to convince people and change the way they think about it and maybe reassess their priors. And because when you hear from the mouths of these children themselves and you see their lives, I don't know how you couldn't at least reconsider what you maybe thought. So it's made for everybody. It's not a right-wing film. It actually sort of bashes both sides.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, because, I mean, the left-leaning states, the Democratic states, were closed the longest, but Trump shut everything down at first. So
right, yeah. I mean, listen, we have to be honest here. We have to. It's not just one party. It really isn't.
Even the libertarians were all in on lockdowns. And you're like, I mean, libertarians, haven't you been waiting for a moment like this to stand up for our freedoms? And you were all in on lockdowns? Everybody failed. So no one is spared.
Good.
It's not kind of one side or the other. But mostly it's about the children.
Well, and that's the most important thing of all.
Yeah.
And if we can't care about our kids, then we've really lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my feeling, is if we can't actually embrace and care, you're not supposed to put adult needs in front of children's. And that's what we did.
We did.
People were going to, you know, packed stadiums with 60,000 people. And 2-year-olds were still masked in preschool.
You know, the protests that were going on, the Black Lives Matter, you would live. OK, protest. Awesome.
Fine.
But why can't I go to a funeral?
Yeah, I had a very close friend die in August of 2020. One of my closest friends, not from COVID, from cancer. We couldn't have a funeral for 10 people at the beach in San Francisco.
Yep.
I'll never forgive for that.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, I love you very much. And I'm so supportive in everything that you do. I'm so grateful you came into my life. And you're wearing that beautiful T-shirt proudly. And I'm proud of you.
That is so nice, Janice. I will say I'm very grateful for you. And it's hard to explain how much it means to get, you know, an email or a DM from someone you feel like you know that maybe you don't know yet that's like, you got this, girl. It means everything when you feel like the world is against you. So thank you.
Well, see, we were brought together by a terrible pandemic, and that's a silver lining.
That is. Thank you for everything you do.
Love you so much.
Love you too. Mwah.
Thanks again to Jennifer Seay for stopping by the Fox Radio studios today to spread the word about her amazing new projects, including XXXY Athletics, which you can find online at www.xx-xyathletics.com. Thank you to all of my listeners. If you have someone you think should make the Dean's List, let me know at Janice Dean on Twitter or Janice Dean FNC on Instagram. Or you can rate this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.